Welcome back, folks, to episode 61 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. And what we're going to be discussing today is altruism. Altruism is a really big term as far as not necessarily how difficult it is to understand, but rather in the application of it. And also, we're going to be covering post-traumatic stress reactivity, not necessarily PTSD disorder level post-traumatic stress reactivity, but something that's a little more common in our population. And we'll discuss that in addition to altruism. And we're going to discuss grace, not just compassion towards others, but also towards ourselves. And what we're going to start the discussion with is going to be, once again, altruism. Now, when we have this principle of altruism in practice, and me being a clinician, also an educator, and just a general human being, one of the most important things that we learn from very young is having, if we've been parented by a generally healthy parenting couple or whomever it is that brought us up, they teach us how altruism looks like whenever we're small, whenever we're being socialized, when we're, especially when we're under age two, and we're unsocialized and learning the skills and knowing what the cues are that we're supposed to respond to appropriately based on our culture, that sort of thing. But when we're still little unsocialized savages, which I love that term once again, we are in the process of learning altruism by demonstration. Often kindness at the hands of parents, and also patience and understanding that, well, these little ones are going to make mistakes and this is the first time they're learning this. This gives us a little room, and this is what we would call maybe the first blush of altruism whenever we initially experience it as a human being. But throughout our life, we become more apt to see what it looks like and how it's applied to us, and how it's more judiciously applied whenever there are limits and guidelines, when we're learning the consequences of our actions, generally within a safer setting, before we get let loose out into the world at large, so to speak. So altruism is something generally that we have whenever we're looking at the greater benefit of the whole, or the greater benefit of the individual we're being parented, or we're guiding somebody or teaching somebody a skill, and knowing that we're planting seeds of kindness, so to speak, acceptance, and also non-judgmentalism in the sense that I am somehow better or somehow you are less than, whatever position I might take in my mind. But the altruism is one wherever we do not limit our kindness or develop a sense of aversion towards what it is that we may judge or deem this person to be. Now, altruism can become a very difficult thing. And Carl Rogers is probably one of the most influential people in modern psychology in the teaching of unconditional positive regard. That regardless if you have somebody along the lines of a dictator that's had many people killed and murdered, maybe even had their hands in the process of killing other people, but being able to see the value of the person is something that not only takes practice, but also requires that we set ourselves aside, set our ego aside, and even whatever aversion or fear we may have, fear is rooted in ego or the sense of ego loss or expectation of ego loss, then that is where we start running into problems when we're trying to be all-embracing, all-encompassing, altruistic. This may seem like a hard charge, but when we look at little ones, it doesn't matter what a parent has done if they identify you or if they identify the fact that you're a mom or a dad. It doesn't matter if you've gone and done something heinous or wrong against or counter the law or done terrible things, but just as long as you have a relationship with them, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, they still have this sense of want to have total acceptance from you and approval, but also they want to accept you despite your own mistakes and faux pas. And there is a reflection of that altruism from little ones. So that is a very deep concept, and we'll move along from this for now. But we will definitely revisit this. So the next thing, what we're going to be discussing is post-traumatic stress reactivity. Now, this is something that altruism has occasionally played a part in whenever we've looked at things, situations after the fact, where maybe we have judged the person or situation as a negative or averse, or things were so adverse that I am now afraid or choose not to do certain things. Or maybe I was an experience that may have been traumatic, and we'll call that an adverse traumatic event. But also this sense of post-trauma reactivity in the body, post-stress, doesn't always have to be traumatic, but post-stress, we condition and we remember. And then that kind of shapes, based on how our body's responding, and our body may respond very quickly as a result of that pain, that conditioning, that trauma or fear or fright, whatever it may have been. And we will respond in kind by putting ourselves in a situation where maybe we don't deal with that, where we judge things as harshly and don't go near such things if we know those events or things are going to happen again. So if anything, our survivability goes up as a result of maybe we've had a painful experience and we learned the lesson, so to speak, and we, in a sense, sometimes get stuck with the memory in the sense that we do remember. We're not going to not remember, but we get stuck in the reverie and sometimes the over-evaluation of what happened. And we don't just take the lesson, we take the memory with us, and then we judge ourselves harshly as a result of how badly we felt. Now, the main reason behind speaking about post-traumatic stress reactivity or reactivity in general, is that often whenever our physiology is driving, whenever we are in the fight-flight response, our thoughts become much more simplified and our higher thinking tends to go away as a result of blood flow shunting off to the skeletal muscles, this sort of thing. And varying degrees of stress will also increase or decrease the varying amount of how much cognitive capacity is lost due to not having the fuel to do the thinking, the blood carrying blood sugar, so to speak. Yes, there are neurotransmitter, in effect, electrochemical things going on as well. Blood flow is incredibly important to this process as well. And that means that we have to realize that whenever we want to be compassionate, kind, sometimes it's really hard if our heart rate is really high and our breathing has changed to where it's like we're exercising or running. If we're at about 110 beats a minute and we're walking briskly towards or away from something, or just walking around the block or in a park somewhere, you're still able to speak. And you're able to have some good thinking. You may not be thinking as broadly as normal. You may be very actually linear thinking and thinking more deeply about those simple things. But whenever we bring that below 110 beats per minute to somewhere around a walking pace, about 80, we're able to pontificate a little more deeply and work with the abstract mindset. So that way we can gauge how we're going to deal with things and what principles are going to serve us, this sort of thing. But get up beyond that 110 beats a minute, closer to that 140, 160, and we may be able to picture and visualize what it is that we're seeing, but we may not be able to make some really sound, rational decisions as quickly. It might take some time, a little more effort than usual. 1 + 1 = 2 is really easy whenever we're nice and calm and our assumption of safety is met, but whenever our stress levels go up, it becomes a little more difficult. You may know it, you may have it down pat, you may have truly mastered this over a lifetime, but yet even that becomes difficult because it's no longer a priority as a result. So whenever you try to do mathematics, anything, whenever your body's in stress and your immediate physical environment is priority, then it's kind of hard to do those things. The skeletal muscle strength and speed becomes the priority. So therefore, we have to address those things that are the priority. Make sure things are safe, meet our assumption of safety. And if things aren't safe, try to get safe. And they may require us to move or walk or run or do what we need to do to get away from there. But it gets harder whenever we're physically active to apply that altruistic mindset, so to speak. It doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means it takes a little more effort because there is some cognitive process involved. Now, the next thing we're going to discuss is not only compassion, but grace. It's really easy to have patience with someone else and allow the grace to make a mistake and learn. And it's really easy to say, along the lines of what Joe Vitale speaks in his book, zero limits. And he discusses the term from Ho'oponopono from Hawaii, that have to do with compassion towards self, directed towards self. And it may seem a little esoteric or woo, but it's probably one of the most effective tools I have ever used and taught people, because whenever we look at ourself, often we tend to judge ourselves very harshly. And you can't run from your head. Your mind goes wherever you go. And whenever we have a mistake that we're remembering, or an event that's embarrassing, or something that's shameful, the memory comes up, and we'll never forget the memory. We do everything we can to not be thinking about those things, but the feelings come up, and we're more apt to be kind and gentle and forgiving towards others, but it's really hard to turn that toward ourselves. It's okay to say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you, out and away from us to the people out in our environment. Even if it's hard, it's easier to apply it that way, but it's so much harder, it seems, to apply it towards ourselves. It's really hard to allow ourselves that opportunity for some self-love and kindness and self-acceptance, and allowing ourselves a little grace to be able to make some mistakes and know that at some point, hey, we're going to make them, but also give ourselves the room to make those mistakes without necessarily judging ourselves very harshly. And that often comes from very hair-trigger, knee-jerk reactions that may, as a result, have come from early conditioning when maybe we were young, if we were parented roughly, or if we were judged harshly by those that maybe we were relying upon, and we're doing the best we can just to make sure we had our needs met. And that can be very hard to do whenever we have been treated harshly, or whenever we judge ourselves harshly, just to keep ourselves from further being judged or placed into situations that are painful. Because the older we become, the more in charge we become of ourselves, but we also know how to stay away from those things that may have caused us harm in the beginning when we're younger or before today in the first place. We become very avoidant of those things, even if it means harsh self-judgment. Sometimes we have to allow ourselves a little grace and realize we're human, and I don't want to say we're imperfect, but we're perfectly whom it is that we are, but yet even with our little flaws and foibles and faux pas that we commit out in the social scheme, we're still valuable as individuals, and having that unconditional positive regard towards others is easier than it is towards ourselves. And part of it's because those little reactions that come up in our mind wherever, look, you did this, you see that, you remember when you did this, it's like, okay, I remember, but then we very quickly jump into self-judgment because of the guilt and shame that comes up with that. And those things can actually slow us down from making really good progress, not only with ourselves, but also with communication with others and in relationship with others, not necessarily relationship as in romantic, even though it could in effect affect those, but just in the way we relate to people generally. So these are some important points. We started out with altruism. And the altruistic means that we're applying that compassion in a very big way towards all, in the truest sense of the whole of the population of the earth, so to speak. That is a big idea. But if we understand from the perspective of loving ourselves and having grace and compassion and patience with ourselves, more so from the perspective that even quantum mechanics is talking about right now, and they consider this a very non-local universe, if we truly are connected. And most religions tend to speak of this, and I'm not getting to spirituality necessarily, nor religion for that matter. But if we are truly connected, the compassionate, altruistic perspective is one that if you're in effect being kind, compassionate, and allowing ourselves grace and giving ourselves absolute acceptance, in the sense that we accept how we are the way we are right now without doing anything first, we just do. And whenever we have that, then we're not only elevating ourselves and liberating ourselves, making ourselves better and more spacious, so to speak, and not so contracted out in the universe in our day-to-day experiences, but rather we're also, in effect, causing that to improve and create spaciousness and grace and acceptance with everyone else. If we are truly connected, we're a smaller reflection of the whole, and the whole is a reflection of ourself, then we are doing a service to everyone by doing that. But we're also serving ourselves, and that is really an important thing. That's not a selfish thing. That is self-kindness, self-nurturing. That's also self-investment. That also means that people that we interact with get a better version of ourselves out into the universe, so to speak, or out and about in public, out in the marketplace. And hard as it is to interact with people on a physical level sometimes, sometimes we have more struggle with our ideas of how we're going to interact with somebody, and we predict and expect, and we tend to categorize and try to, in effect, minimize any negative impacts that the Buddhists would call dukkha, or impact, or the experience whenever we interact with life. And when we impact with life, that's where we get our experience, so to speak. And suffering isn't necessarily a have-to thing. You don't have to suffer. Many people misinterpret that, but really it's experience. We have to experience to have life. And through understanding from a perspective of altruism, compassion towards others, and note that sometimes we become aversive as a result of painful experience in the past, the post-trauma or post-stress for that matter, reactivity that we were talking about earlier, then maybe it begs to question, should I or should I not be extending myself in a compassionate way? Because every person has had dukkha or experience, impact, so to speak. And it's not all been nice. It's not all been fun. It's not all been unicorns and rainbows. It may have been aversive in the sense that now they don't want to do something, or adverse in the sense that it impacted and shaped or changed them. We do know, and it's pretty well studied in the scientific literature, that any kind of experience that is particularly traumatic, any kind of experience for that matter that we have, shapes our brain or synapses. But fear, induction, terror, that sort of thing, pain, physical pain, actually changes not only the shape, but the size of our amygdala, our fear centers, and that part that actually consolidates not only memory, but experience, like the hippocampus. And that actually can, in effect, impact whether or not we can form memory, and whether or not we have good memory access. Depending on how our lower brain structures are more active, they may become the priority because we have more connections in that area. It's kind of like a superhighway. There's less resistance to the traffic, so to speak. Whereas in the areas we may need that have to do with self-control or maybe even recall and remembering memory, they have fewer connections in comparison to the lower brain. Then we may, in effect, be fighting an uphill battle. So we may be more apt to react in a shocked or an anxious state. So we do know that stress impacts and shapes our brain. That's that neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity, when we hear about it, it's always in the upside. It's always on the upswing that, you know, this is improvement. And by virtue of neuroplasticity, you can learn new skills and you can do things of that nature. And this is true. This has been studied and there's a lot of evidence. So for me to say true, it's not too far from the fact of the matter. So I'm comfortable saying that. But also in the negative sense, we have to understand that neuroplastic response is one of learning. If we learn from a very painful experience, don't do that, don't be there, let's not experience that again, then we understand that that very neuroplasticity was an educational learning or impact point, according to what we were talking about earlier. It's experience. And this is an important thing to remember. So that's really about it that we're going to talk about today, this morning. I woke up at 5 this morning, don't know why, but here I am, and I'm talking to you about some things that came to mind whenever I was still in bed, and I think that there are just some important points that were worth discussing this morning on the podcast. I want to tell you thank you for sharing some time with me. I certainly have really enjoyed talking about these topics, and I'm hoping it's something that'll make a difference in your life. And if you know somebody that could benefit from listening to this podcast, please pass it on to them. And I would really appreciate that. And you can find the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast on all platforms at this point in time, including YouTube. And we're looking at expanding a little further into other platforms as well. well, and other media. So that being the case, as soon as those changes pop up, I will definitely let you know. There is probably going to be a book or several books, actually, that are coming down the pipes in the future. And as soon as we have those things in order, and it shouldn't be long, I'll let y'all know. I think it may be useful. And they will be in regards to the self-regulatory skills and that sort of thing. But it's not anything that you'd have to do, but certainly something I would appreciate y'all's interest in, because that will shape also the amount and what direction we'll go with those books in effect in the future. So once again, I appreciate your time and thank you. Really good talking to you. And if you know somebody who could benefit from this podcast, please share it with them. And if you have any feedback to send me, please do that at runningmangetskillsproject@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and really enjoy talking to you once again. Take care. Walk well.